the person has to want to work on themselves, because cheating for many people is a coping strategy. So that's how they cope with whatever they may be going through.
Yeah.
So that's how it is for many people. They feel empty in their lives. They need excitement, or they don't know how to repair a relationship. They just go find something else. So the thing is, the person has to be willing to look inwards, work with a professional, probably is a good idea. Research and then find out what kind of coping strategy can I use that's healthier.
Hello and welcome to the Personal Development School podcast. I am so excited you're here. I am your co-host, Thais Gibson, along with our new special host, Mike Dizio. This is a podcast that discusses everything related to integrated attachment theory, the new attachment theory, along with the subconscious mind, relationships, communication, needs, boundaries, and so much more. Throughout this podcast, you'll see a series of episodes I upload with new information, educational tips all about how to thrive in relationships and really master your emotional state in your life, along with special guests hosted by Mike Dizio to discuss all of these amazing topics in some longer form content. Thank you so much for being here, and I really hope you enjoy this episode.
My guest today is a certified trauma-informed coach, mindfulness instructor, breathwork teacher, and a relationship and self-esteem coach. Through online coaching programs, she teaches private clients tools to help build self-esteem, heal past trauma, and relieve stress and anxiety. Personal Development School listeners and podcast viewers, I'd like to introduce my guest, Natalia Christensen. Hello, Natalia. How are you doing today?
Hello, Mike. I'm good. Thank you. How are you?
Very good. Thank you for being here. So I just wanted to start out, maybe for our audience who might not have seen your work before, I was wondering if you could just spend a few moments letting us know who you are, what you do, and maybe a little bit about your backstory.
Sure. Thank you for the introduction, by the way. So to add to that, I do work with people in relationships, and then I also work with people who are trying to get out of and heal from toxic relationships or very emotionally damaging relationships. So that's where the self-esteem part comes in.
Right.
And I do that through online work with my clients, and we connected through Instagram, I believe, where I make a lot of little skits.
Yeah, love those.
That explain attachment styles, relationship problems, how to handle difficult things, and especially toxic relationships and so forth.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So where did you get the idea to do the skits? Because they're really helpful. Like in one of the classes that I teach, communication script practice, I used to show role play scenarios. And when I would source videos for those, I couldn't find that many out there. But then when I saw yours now, I'm like, wow, this really shows like a good example of how to sort of communicate back and forth. So just curious, like how you got the idea to do that.
Well, I use Instagram a lot myself, right? Just for pleasure and for out of interest. And I started seeing a few content creators who were doing this. For example, the holistic psychologist, know her.
Sure, sure.
Like she doesn't do it that much, but I think she did a couple, and I thought, wow, that's a great idea. And I had been on Instagram for a long time with my coaching, and I did have clients and my business was fine, but I didn't have that big of a reach on Instagram in the same way that I do now. But then when I started doing this type of role play, then suddenly I think it resonated with people. I think it's a very effective way of learning strategies instead of a teacher just standing. And I used to make videos where I would just talk to people like, remember, if someone does this, that you don't have to blah, 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 you know?
Yeah.
But somehow it resonates with people more in this way. It's that's my experience right now.
I agree. No, seeing it in action is very helpful. I'm glad you do it that way.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to get into maybe your own personal story. We see a lot of people, you know, they get into coaching, healing work from their own sort of adversities and triumphs. What for yourself, was there a rock bottom moment or something that really pushed you to dig into your own healing? And then now you're able to help others.
Yeah, there was a rock bottom. I mean, I have been suffering from anxiety since I was maybe a kid or a teenager, at least. I just didn't know it back then, but it was just getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And at the you know, beginning of my 20s, it was really, really bad. And then around my mid 20s, it was peaking and my anxiety was so bad. I didn't enjoy anything. I constantly had rumination, worries. I couldn't enjoy life. I stopped going out and socializing with friends. It was just not fun anymore. So for me, something drastic had to change. Right. And at that time, I was all about science. And, you know, I was working at a media agency and everything was very much like that. And I had seen a couple of psychologists and therapists, but nothing had really worked. But then I started exploring some alternative methods for this anxiety I was having. And it was kind of a breakthrough for me because some of these meditation techniques, they worked. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty amazing to me. So I did hit rock bottom with the anxiety, and it was completely influencing my life on every level. And I just wasn't happy, even though looking from the outside, it looked like I had it all. I was working in a media agency. I had a boyfriend. I had a great apartment in Copenhagen. I had, you know, like it looked great, but it didn't feel great. So it does. Then it doesn't matter, you know.
No, yeah, not at all. And it, you know, not it can be confusing for people because they have all the check marks ticked and it's like, I should be happy, but I'm not. I should feel good, but I don't. And then it gets confusing and it's like, hey, it was taught to me, if I do all these things, I'm going to be happy and feel good. And then you do all these things and you don't feel happy and feel good. And then it's very confusing. It's like, oh my gosh, what do I do now? So it sounds like, you know, you had to search and do your own searching to find the answers that work for you. And that's wonderful. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, so true. No worries. I mean, I feel that that's a story we've heard before, right? I feel like many find their path through something kind of like this. Like they think they hacked life. They did everything that looks good on paper and somehow it just didn't work, right? So that's definitely how it was for me. So I made radical changes and I broke up with a boyfriend. He was a great boyfriend. Like there's no shaming of that boyfriend here.
No,
like,
for sure.
Nothing wrong with him, but it's just, it was me. I was the problem at that time.
Totally.
So I broke up with him, quit my job, quit the apartment, moved to Costa Rica.
Oh, wow.
Lived in the jungle for a year and did a total reset. And then when I came back, somehow things never became the same. So, yeah,
wow.
That's the beginning of my story with this work.
I love that. And I always ask people, even though it was probably so much pain, just pain that you wouldn't wish upon anyone, can you say now that you're so thankful that you went through that period? Because look at where you are now. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. Who knows, you know, where you'd be. So would you say you're almost thankful that you went through this?
100%. Yeah. Really. And I know it's such a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's our darkest times that really do guide us in a new direction. And if we are going in a wrong direction in life, then something has to stop us. Yes. I was going in a wrong direction. That wasn't really me. I was trying to live up to everyone's expectations. I was a major people pleaser and it wasn't really me. So something had to stop me. Right. So that's what the anxiety was doing.
Right.
It was actually trying to help me. In its own not so comfortable way, but it had to scream to get my attention because I was so focused on this path that I was on, you know?
Yes. Yes. Wow. That's inspiring. Thank you for sharing. So I wanted to go on to relationship type stuff. And our audience, you know, is very big into attachment theory. And that's what we teach a lot of at Personal Development School. I know you've done a lot of your own healing work to become secure attachment. What was your attachment style or dominant attachment style before you did a work on yourself? And what do you say was probably the most hardest or challenging parts about being that attachment style?
I want to say, big disclaimer here, I wouldn't say that I am 100% secure at this time. And I'm just going to be honest with you.
No, that's like, okay. I don't think anybody is 100%. Yeah.
No, I don't think so. My attachment style used to be fearful avoidant.
Fearful avoidant, yeah.
Right. And so now I am maybe 70% secure, 30% fearful avoidant.
Amazing.
But it's still there, you know,
sure,
and it
sure,
can definitely get triggered. But it's just, I have so much knowledge at this point, and I've done so much work on myself that I can kind of catch myself when these patterns come up, and then I know what to do to kind of balance myself out again emotionally and so forth. But yeah, the disorganized, fearful avoidant.
For sure.
Type.
And do you remember any years, one thing that was just really challenging that would always like happen over and over? Was it the people pleasing? Cafes tend to fall into people pleasing or boundaries or not speaking up for your needs? Was there anything that was really challenging for you?
I would say all of the above of what you just said, but something that I'm really struggling with still is commitment phobia.
Oh, really?
You know, because there's always that push pull. No, I'm kind of handling it, and I'm in a solid relationship. We're getting married, and like it's all good, right? But it's in it's not just in the relationship area that I'm experiencing these fearful avoidant tendencies.
Yeah,
you know, it's been hard for me. You know, I move from place to place, and even though it's exhausting, I like it as well because I feel safe in that, because I never sign a 3-year contract anywhere or buy a house or anything like that. And that still does give me some anxiety, that kind of commitment.
Yeah.
So I would say in the relationship department, relationship department, I have more or less overcome my fearful avoidant tendencies, but within other areas of my life, I'm still struggling with it.
Yeah. Right. No, my reaction to that was because you shared that you have a fiance and you're engaged. I'm like, fear of commitment. I'm like, you're making the ultimate commitment. But I hear what you're saying. There's still sort of that like background fear of like sort of being trapped or, you know, totally. That makes a lot of sense.
Well, exactly. And like I said, there's a lot of secure attachment in me at this point as well that can kind of outweigh the fearful avoidant.
That's
luckily.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Your feelings minus fears, the feelings are more pronounced, whereas avoidant types or whatever can have, you know, fears are much more than the feelings, and then it makes them want to be like, no, this is not safe.
Yeah.
So that's for sure. Wonderful. So in your coaching practice, what would you say are some of the most common issues that people are coming to you for, and why do you think this is such an area of struggle for so many people?
It's interesting because I started off working with self-esteem, and not so much relationships in the beginning. But then I noticed that the clients who came to me, they had something in common, all of them. They all had a hard time setting boundaries. They were all people pleasing. Many of them had anxious attachment styles, and they were struggling with more or less the same things that had come from either messy childhoods or toxic relationships, bad relationships that had kind of played out the same dynamics from their childhood again. Right. So I started to notice, okay, you've all been in unhealthy relationships. So there's something here, right? There's something here. And so I started working with relationships more and more as well. And now I would say that's mainly what I work with. But that was interesting to me that they all had so many things in common, including unhealthy relationships.
Right. Wow. Right. Interesting. So we touched before on your role play skits that you do on your Instagram page, which I love so much. There's one that you did entitled Wanting to Change Your Partner. In the video, it asks, the partner says, do you think it's healthy for you to focus on what you want to change about me all the time? And when I saw that, I felt myself, I'm like, that's been a theme in like so many of my relationships where I felt my partner was always trying to change me. I wasn't good enough the way I was. And they were always trying to push me to change. And then in your video, the other partner says, I'm just trying to help you become the best version of yourself. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I understand wanting your partner to improve and be happy and really, you know, realize their potential. But is it a partner's role to do that? Or what's a better strategy instead of always pointing out maybe negative things? What's a better strategy to help your partner kind of realize their best potential?
A better strategy is to support your partner and build them up. And that is by accepting where they are in the current moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then encouraging them when they're taking steps towards bettering themselves, if that's what they want to do. But I would say that when you're in a relationship, at the core, you have to accept that your partner is where they are.
Right.
At any given moment. And it's not your job to change them. And if you don't like it, you know what I mean? It's like you chose this partner. So for better or for worse, you have to accept that this partner will also go through highs and lows in life and have good times, maybe go through depression. We go through it all, right? So it's really, because there's a difference between wanting the best for your partner and then wanting to change your partner.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That it's subtle, but there is really a difference. Yeah. So constantly criticizing and nagging and all of that, it has the opposite effect. In reality, your partner will become irritated with you and will probably not do the thing you want them to do.
Right.
Because no one thrives on that, right?
Yeah, for sure. Also, sometimes if you notice you're the one who's being very critical of your partner, Is that also a reflection of how you're viewing yourself? Maybe you're very self-critical all the time. So then you project that sort of onto your partner as well.
For sure. I mean,
Yeah.
for sure. And that's why I also, so in my business, I also work a lot with the self-esteem and
Right.
and self-love, which is a part of it, because the more we accept ourselves, the more we're able to accept our partners. You know, it really comes from within. So someone who has an incredibly critical voice inside their head all day long, they are going to project that onto their partner. That's
Right.
just what it is. So it also means that if you who are listening are experiencing your partner being very critical of you, you don't necessarily have to take it that personally.
Right.
You know,
That's so important.
there are many nuances to this that I could go into,
For sure.
but this is the gist of it. Yeah.
Yeah, no. And I totally agree. And, you know, like I said, I was always taking it as criticism, but then I did realize that a lot of people I've dated, there was a lot of pressure on them in childhood on, you know, performing and doing well, and they had to be perfect. So I understand, you know, the need for them to outwardly project that as well. But then on the flip side, I also understand I had some people who genuinely wanted to help me and point out things, and they weren't trying to have a dig at me. So yeah, I love all that you shared there.
Yeah, and it gets a little bit confusing, right? Because we can all also be really quick to jump to the defense when
Yes.
someone suggests something, right? Because we're so used to people criticizing us. So the foundation of a really healthy relationship is knowing that your partner really wants the best for you.
Exactly.
You know,
Yeah.
if they're
Exactly.
saying something, then they're not saying it to criticize you. They're saying it to just elevate you and support you. But that also has a lot to do with the tone, the words that are used in communication, and so forth.
Totally, 100%. So another skit that you touched on the topic, which is really interesting, is once a cheater, always a cheater. So I think a lot of people subscribe to this phrase. It's 100% belief that this is what happens. Once a cheater, always a cheater. Why did you, or why do you challenge this phrase? And in what circumstances would you give a past cheater a chance, and why?
If we believe this phrase, then we're basically also believing that people cannot grow and evolve and change. That's what my work is all about. That's what I help people do. So of course I cannot believe that phrase, because I see people evolving and changing all the time, right? It's a very deterministic view of how the human psyche works. It's like, you are like this and you'll never change. It doesn't matter what you do. If you cheated once when you were 15, you're always going to cheat. It just doesn't resonate with me and my life experience, right? It's also black and white thinking, which is not something I'm a fan of, because there's always a lot of nuances. And it's important, especially in these types of cases, to look at the gray areas as well. And I'm not condoning cheating. I'm not saying that you should stay with a serial cheater in a relationship with someone who constantly is showing you that you can't trust them. But I don't subscribe to this particular saying, and I don't think it's true. And I've seen it again and again and again with my clients as well.
Yeah, it
so,
seems
yeah.
seems very unfair. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be judged for how I was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. I feel like I'm a totally different person. And, you know, it's really not fair to have to, you know, shamed or have that almost painted on your chest that you are a cheater or you did this, right? But if you've grown and put in work and realize why you were doing that, I feel like a person can be just as good as anybody else in a relationship and shouldn't be left that way either. Yeah.
For sure. And I think that that's just really the key. The person has to want to work on themselves, because cheating for many people is a coping strategy.
Right.
So that's how they cope with whatever they may be going through.
Yeah.
Right? So that's how it is for many people. They feel empty in their lives. They need excitement, or they don't know how to repair a relationship. They just go find something else. So the thing is, the person has to be willing to look inwards.
Yes.
Work with a professional probably is a good idea. Research and then find out what kind of coping strategy can I use that's healthier. And that doesn't completely damage my entire life and my relationship and hurt the person that I love the most in this world.
Right. I love that. It's given them power that, okay, at this point in time, you don't have a better strategy, but there are things out there to help you with what you're feeling and, you know, why you're having this coping strategy, basically. That's great.
Incredibly self-destructive.
For sure. Right. Definitely. Yeah, it hurts everyone.
So I have some exciting news, which is that we are doing $1,000 off of our lifetime membership sale to the Personal Development School, which means you get access to literally everything at PDS for your entire rest of your life. Essentially, that entails all of our different courses you have lifetime access to. I do 4 live webinars a week, every single week. You can access them ongoing, and you get access to all of our daily community events permanently. So literally access to everything at the PDS platform forever. And if you're looking to find community, you're looking to connect with like-minded people who are also working on their relationships, care about emotional connection and healing, we've got all those different events. And if you just want the security of that ongoing support and connection whenever you need it, that's just on demand, that is there for you. We have that 24/7 sort of component because you can post in our specific chat channels, connect with other community members. And we literally have so many people from across the world supporting each other, helping each other out, and most importantly, really becoming securely attached and seeing the results. So I'd love to see you on the other side, and you can access it by using the link in the description box below.
So you teach about how people are in toxic relationships, you know, and one of your videos, you were saying, you know, how toxic relationships are very addictive and sometimes very, very hard to leave. Can you share with us why you believe relationships that are toxic are so hard to leave, and any advice on what people can do maybe to start the process of being like, this is not good for me?
Yeah. So the problem with leaving a toxic relationship is that you will usually feel as if you are more in love with this toxic person than you have ever been before with anyone else.
Mm.
And it's because of the highs and the lows. The highs are very, very high, and the lows are very, very low. And there's something called intermittent reinforcement,
right,
that I'm sure you've heard about, which is if you're with a toxic partner, sometimes they'll give you the good love, but you don't know when.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it can be on day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they're being incredibly toxic, but on day 6 and on day 7, suddenly you're getting the good love.
Mm-hmm.
So that becomes addictive. It's the same reason why gamblers become addicted to gambling.
Right.
It's that you know it's there, and you know it's going to come at some point, but you don't know when. So you're waiting around for the good love. And
right,
the thing with toxic relationships is that they usually start with a love bombing phase, where everything is just incredible. You're getting all this attention, and the toxic person will mirror exactly what you want in a partner and show that to you, even though that may just be a facade. And then once you're hooked, that good love will just slowly go away.
Mm.
Right? And when we're talking about toxic relationships, I think it's important to state that it's relationships where one or both partners are unwilling or unable to change.
Right.
Because we all have toxic traits, to be honest with you. We all do. Doesn't mean we're in a toxic relationship. Yeah.
Exactly.
It doesn't mean that our relationship is toxic just because your partner is doing some toxic things.
Yeah.
But if your partner has some kind of diagnosis and they can't change or they don't want to change, then it does become a toxic relationship because there's no growth.
There's no growth.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting and important to say that we all, to an extent, have some toxic traits. And if you're just going to say that person's toxic and nothing that you do is sort of co-creating the situation, then, you know, probably not going to grow and not going to get to the bottom of why this always happens, right?
Yeah.
And I love the casino analogy because, you take so many losses, you lose so much money, but then when you win and all that losses and bad times, you forget about that. You're just like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
This was all worth it. But then you go
euphoria.
Back. Oh, yeah, exactly. Those neurochemicals that feel so good, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's so true. And it's interesting. Again, there's a little bit of this black and white thinking on Instagram. I see a lot of reels where it's like, if he does this, this, and this, leave him. He doesn't love you. He doesn't care. Like this type of communication, it's just not very nuanced.
Exactly.
And I work with people who have been in toxic relationships, and there is a big difference. You know, it's much more when it's a toxic relationship, there's no empathy.
Mm-hmm.
There's much more strategy behind the manipulation and behind the good love, bad love, love bombing, gaslighting, all of this stuff. It's calculated in a different way than just a person who has had no education on how to manage emotions, right?
Right. Yeah, that's an important point to distinguish. So I want to move on to the topic of jealousy. I'm sure everyone's experienced jealousy one time or another. And you mentioned how jealousy can help you grow. And, you know, I think a lot of people, when they feel jealous, almost feel like ashamed, and they're like, oh, like, I hate that I'm feeling this. This feels weak that I'm feeling jealous. So instead of getting upset at ourselves or judging ourselves for this feeling, what perspective can we take to look at jealousy as a growth opportunity?
Well, jealousy is a teacher. So what jealousy teaches us is, what do we want that we don't currently have, right? So let's say you see another woman, she has perfect body, whatever, yada, yada, you know, whatever it can be. Maybe you feel you need to work on your body, or you need to, I'm not saying anyone needs to have a perfect body here. Please don't misunderstand me, but you know what I mean? It says something about that you think you should work on this area of your life, or someone who's super successful, and that makes you jealous because you would like to be that successful. So you need to put in the work to get there. So it can kind of help you decipher what do you really want? What are your goals? If you're confused about what you want in life, then you can look at, who am I jealous at? Right. And so, and right now I'm talking about the type of jealousy that is not based in reality. If your boyfriend goes out and flirts with women in front of you, it's natural to be jealous, and you can be jealous, and you should be jealous. And there's nothing, it doesn't say anything about your goals or desires. I'm talking about the type of jealousy that's not provoked in any way.
Right.
You just see someone and think, oh my God, she's so amazing, or he's so amazing. It's a great teacher.
It's feedback, to show that, hey, this is an area that you actually want to be good at, but you're not putting energy or attention into it. So maybe this is a bit of a tap on the shoulder. Hey, like, you can do that. You just got to put in the work. Yeah. So on your YouTube channel, you have a YouTube channel as well. And you have a video entitled, "Too Much Empathy Can Hurt You and Others." So in my eyes, you know, empathy is usually seen as a really great trait to have. And if you're very proud, if you think you're an empathetic person. But when does empathy cross into the territory where it could start to hurt yourself and others?
The problem with empathy and the so-called empaths, which I would consider myself one of those as well. But the problem is that if you feel too much of other people's emotions and other people's pain, if it weighs too heavy on you, you are going to burn out. You are going to go down with stress. You're going to be so exhausted, you'll have nothing left, right? So what often happens with empaths, and I've gone through this myself, so there's absolutely no judgment, I'm still working on it as well myself, is that you'll have to take a certain amount of distance from people because it's just too overwhelming and it's too exhausting if you haven't learned how to kind of separate yourself a little bit from other people and not take on all of their emotions and cry when they cry and feel too much.
Right.
And what I mean when I say like it can hurt you and others is that because of that distance you have to take, you might not be able to be there for people in the same way that someone who has less empathy would be able to. Right? So someone who has less empathy has more energy, because they're not so exhausted after hanging out with someone who's in distress for 3 hours, because they didn't take on all of that pain. They just took on a little bit of it.
Right.
So they can actually be there for someone else. They can drive them to the hospital. They can do all of those things. If you started crying right now, and then I start crying because you're crying, it's not helpful. You know what I mean? It's like, it might be very, I might have a lot of empathy, but it doesn't help you that now I'm crying.
Yeah, totally. That makes so much sense, because I know in the past where sometimes, you know, somebody's going through a terrible period in their life and I want to be there for them. But if I'm sitting with them and they're just really a lot of emotion and just a lot of pain, and then I'm starting to feel it and it's very uncomfortable, I just want to get out of there. In my mind, I'm like, oh my gosh, when is this going to end? And then sometimes I won't talk to them for a few days. I'm like, I need like a few days to rebalance. Whereas I hear what you're saying is like, well, if I at that time knew sort of my boundaries and didn't take on so much, sitting with that person for a couple hours wouldn't completely throw me off, and I wouldn't have the need to have to ignore them for days and days.
That exactly. So that's why empaths, ironically, can end up becoming kind of cold, or they can seem cold, or they don't want to take on too much. They want to stay home. They don't want to engage too much in community because it's, yeah. So what empaths, they have to learn how to kind of put up a bit of a wall,
yeah,
and turn down the empathy.
Right. Yeah. No, I understand. Yeah. People might view them as that, but they're just protecting their energy. They don't know how to sort of dial it down. It's really interesting. Yeah. So you have another video entitled How to Build Your Self-Esteem. And you pose a question, which I thought was super interesting, because of course I asked it to myself too. If you never change yourself from exactly who you are in this moment, would you still love yourself? And I was like, wow, that's amazing, because a lot of people, you know, they're always wanting to work on themselves and grow and evolve. And, you know, they're, oh, I'm not where I want to be right now. But let's just say, for argument's sake, if nothing changed right now, would you still love yourself? And that's such a good question, because you were explaining self-esteem or healthy self-esteem can't be changed. It doesn't matter if you're succeeding, if you're failing, if you lost your job, if you just got an award. True healthy self-esteem stays the same regardless of what's happening outside of you. So I was wondering, in a nutshell, if you could share, if somebody is struggling with low self-esteem, what's something they can do to start building it, and how can they have this healthy self-esteem regardless of what's happening around them?
Yeah. They actually have to learn how to accept their flaws without wanting to change them. Doesn't mean that you can't change some things and get better at some things, or that you shouldn't aim for that. That's fine. But if it comes from self-hate, then it's not good. And it doesn't, it won't help your self-esteem, because if you attach your self-esteem to something that you do, or something you get better at, or you lose weight or something like that, it's too fragile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so many things can happen in this life. And if it's attached to a career or something like that, then it's very, very fragile, and you can lose it in an instant, and it will give you anxiety, right? So it's a lot about accepting the good and the bad about who you are. And it's easy to have self-esteem when things are going great, but what about when you gained weight, when it's not going great, when you got, you know, fired, when your boyfriend left you? What about then, you know, or when you've behaved badly, when you've done bad things? We all do bad things to a certain extent at some point in our lives. You know, none of us are perfect. And being able to accept that that's a part of who you are is the biggest key, I would say, because that's the hardest thing to do. So I can give you an example. So I'm really bad at sports myself. I was always picked last back in school. I'm so clumsy with a ball, and it's just not my thing, right? And I used to be really insecure about it. And if someone would come to me and comment on my abilities, or I would that I was running in a funny way or something like that, it would completely destroy me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But now I've accepted that that's not, I have many strengths, but that's not my biggest strength, and that's okay. So if someone comes to me now and makes fun of the way I run, or that I couldn't catch the ball or whatever, it really doesn't bother me. I'll just laugh and say, oh my God, I know. That looks so funny, right? I bet you were all laughing, you know, because it doesn't, I'm really okay with it.
Yeah.
So really becoming okay with who you are, especially the flaws or the bad things.
Yeah.
That's where it starts.
I love that. And I love I had that shift too. Things that used to pain me so much when people would joke around with me about or point out. Now I have such a laugh about it. I think it's hilarious that, you know, mm-hmm. that I suck in this area, or I can't do this or that, you know. We're not meant to be good at every single thing. Like, that's just not realistic. And focusing on, you know, things that you are good at, that feels nice, right? That's great. And I thought in the video too, you talked about the differentiation, and I thought it was important for our audience to know. What's the major difference between confidence and self-esteem? How do you separate sort of those two terms?
I don't remember exactly what I said in the video, but I'll say what I will say now, which is that confidence is usually attached to something. You're confident in a certain area because you're good at it. You're good at speaking in front of people, so you're confident doing that.
Yeah.
You are a fast runner, so you're confident on the football field. Self-esteem has nothing to do with outside validation. It's about you and you. It's about your relationship with yourself. So confidence is... it's okay to have confidence. There's nothing bad about it, having confidence in the areas that are that you have an easy time with, that that are fun for you, that are great for you or at work. But we don't want to only have confidence and not have the self-esteem part.
Totally.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Right. So confidence can also be broken, you know. It's like it's less solid than self-esteem.
Right. Yeah, so that's exactly what you were touching on in the video, and how confidence can be sort of, it's more of an outward projection. You could be on, if you're always on stage, you can be confident on stage and look, wow, this is a wonderful speaker. But then once you go off stage and you're maybe not feeling good about different areas of your life and your self-esteem's low, anybody watching you on the stage would be like, wow, that's a confident person. But then when you go back to yourself, that self-esteem, if it's not in a good place, then it doesn't matter. It's good you're a confident speaker and it probably might give you a good income or whatnot, but really it's the self-esteem piece that needs to always be focused on, probably more.
Yeah. And confidence doesn't really give you that much happiness, but self-esteem does.
Right. Yeah.
You know, confidence might give you success in certain areas, but it doesn't really give you happiness. It doesn't give you that, peace with yourself, but self-esteem does.
Right. Exactly. It might get you admiration and you're like, wow, I want to be like that. But if you don't admire yourself and you don't think you're awesome all the time, then it doesn't matter how many people are telling you, oh, you're amazing. You're amazing. So
thank you
for sharing that. So you talk about boundaries. Boundaries are obviously so important, and specifically setting boundaries as a people pleaser. And you said, you know, a people pleaser, someone who's not used to setting boundaries, you might immediately, if you do go to set a boundary, you might immediately doubt yourself and wonder if you're being unreasonable or selfish and get like really stressed out. So, but then you go on to explain, it's normal to second guess yourself when you're new at this, because the guilt you feel immediately after the boundary is not to be trusted. So I've definitely had this before where, you know, I've had that, you know, set a boundary, but then right away you're like, oh my gosh, was that too much? Or should I have done that? And second guess if it was the right thing to do. So I was wondering, for someone who's new at setting boundaries, at what point does that guilt and second guessing voice kind of stop? And why should we not trust this voice at all?
Yeah, well, we shouldn't trust it, because if you are a people pleaser, then you are programmed to only be satisfied and happy if everyone around you is pleased. And when you set a boundary, the other person might not be pleased. The other person might be annoyed, you know? And so something that often comes up is that a recovering people pleaser will feel incredibly selfish, right? But that doesn't mean that they are selfish. They're just programmed to think that because they're used to doing everything for everyone else and never anything for themselves.
Right.
So it's also that whole codependency pattern.
Right.
And so that's why it's very predictable, actually. If you are a people pleaser, you are going to feel bad after setting a boundary. You are going to feel selfish. And you can't trust that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's a little disorienting. In the beginning, of course, you don't want it. I had a client and she said to me, she was like, yeah, but if I stop trusting that, what if I turn into this kind of like completely narcissistic asshole?
I
just family and friends horribly. I mean, so of course there has to be a balance. But the thing is, if you've lived your entire life pleasing people, chances are what you need to practice is the opposite. What you need to practice is pleasing yourself.
Right.
And then you'll find the balance in the middle, you know. It's at some point, but you need to practice it.
Right.
And so that's why you can't trust those that immediate guilt and second guessing.
Right. Oh, that's helpful. Thank you. So we touched before on self-love, and you know, a lot of people have these different ideas of what self-love is and what self-love activities they do. For Natalia, what's your sort of definition of self-love, and what are some things that you do or that you think people can be doing to become more self-loving?
Yeah, the first thing is that I always work on my self-acceptance, and I really appreciate spending time alone, always have.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do spend time alone, I spoil myself. You know, I do nice things for myself. I cook food that I like, or order in, or do something that I try to treat myself as someone I love, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's a good question to ask yourself is always, what would someone who loves themselves do in this situation?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that can kind of lead you in the right direction. but I'm getting better and better at it. It's a journey for sure, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can catch yourself not loving yourself or having negative thoughts and so forth. But I try to not judge myself, especially when I'm feeling unmotivated, when I haven't performed during a day, when I've just been lazy, which, believe me, happens very often, that I'm just not feeling it or feeling lazy or not, yeah, being that productive. And yeah, I used to be really hard on myself, but I actually found out that I don't get less results from having those lazy days. It's actually quite the opposite. It's mm-hmm. like I need them.
Yes.
So I just try not to judge myself, because the most self-hating thing is to judge yourself constantly and talk negatively to yourself inside your own head.
Definitely. Yeah, it's those times where we are not feeling it or not really motivated or not doing what we should be doing. Those are the times where we need to be the most self-loving and take it as a sign, as like, hey, it just shows we need to have a bit of a relaxed day and not push on the gas so much. Yeah, so I love that. Okay, so we're coming towards the end of our podcast. Just a couple more questions. And thank you again, Natalia, for your time today. Before we leave, is there a tool or a strategy or a mindset that you want to share with our audience that might help them in their everyday lives?
I think I will say what I said just a minute ago, which is self-acceptance is the key to your life. I mean, it's the key to your relationship. It's the key to your success. It's the key to just your relationship with yourself. If you can learn to accept yourself, you have come so far. So far. So if you're confused with what area to work on first, start with self-acceptance.
Right.
And then go from there, because then you know that all the improvements you are trying to make in your life is coming from a really loving cheerleader type place instead of from a self-hating place.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Obviously, yeah, you're going to get better results if you're your own best cheerleader instead of somebody who's, you know, not talking bad to yourself. I love that advice. Thank you. So we covered a lot today on the podcast, and it's been great. Is there anything else you wanted to share with our audience that maybe we didn't cover?
I mean, there's so much.
I know.
It's such relationships and self-esteem, such big, big topics, right? So there's millions of things, but I think we covered a good deal of important lessons. And yeah.
Definitely, for sure.
Also, nobody's got it totally figured out.
Yes.
Even the coaches and the teachers and the therapists, we're all just trying our best here, right? So don't put other people on pedestals and think that, oh my God, she's a relationship coach. She probably has the perfect relationship and an amazing relationship with herself all the time. It's not like that. I see many people feeling bad, comparing themselves and then feeling bad about themselves.
Yeah.
That's not the reality for anyone. So you are right on track if you're listening right now. Don't worry. I love that.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, many times during the interview, you said even as well, you're not projecting yourself as this perfect 100% healed person. You know, you also, there's areas that you're still working on. There's areas that, you know, you still need to focus on. So I love that we could easily fall into the trap of seeing people who are in this field and be like, wow, they have it all figured out. But really, nobody's 100% figured out. They might have got really good at what they're doing, but there's still probably something, you know, that they need to work on. And that's fine. That's
for sure. And there's a huge difference between having all the knowledge and being able to help other people with some realizations, and then being able to fully heal and apply all of the knowledge on yourself to 100%. You know what I mean? Having a lot of this knowledge can really help someone like me, a coach, a therapist, help others.
Mm-hmm.
But I might have some wounds that I need someone to help me figure out, and that might take some time.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. So what are you offering these days? We talked about your private coaching. Just wanted to know what you're offering these days and how people can maybe get in touch with you.
These days, I offer one-on-one sessions with clients, mm-hmm. and I have a specific self-esteem program, self-esteem program, a 10-week program that a lot of my clients, they start with that, and then they might continue afterwards, but they'll start with that program.
Wonderful.
Which can help you get over past pain. If you've been in difficult relationships or you're having a hard time healing from past relationships, and then it really builds your self-esteem from the inside and out. in some of the ways that we've been speaking about today. And then other than the program, I also just do one-on-one sessions with couples and with clients. Yeah, one-on-one clients.
Wonderful.
And you can find me on my, you asked how to reach out to me. So you can find me on my website. I have a form where you can apply for a 15-minute free call where we can just meet and have a chat. And you can also message me on Instagram, but I definitely recommend reaching out through the website and the form, because on Instagram I get a lot of DMs and I don't always read all of them. You know, maybe once in a while I'll go through all of them, but so if you want to reach me, then through the website. NataliaChristensen.com. And it's the same, my Instagram and my TikTok and my YouTube channel, that they're all just Natalia Christensen.
You're the only Natalia Christensen on the planet?
It seems as if I am, yeah.
Perfect.
But who knows?
Yeah.
If you're out there, let me know.
Give me a call, yeah. Well, Natalia, thank you so much for your time. I learned a lot, and I'm sure our audience will really enjoy this one. And yeah, just thanks again for being here. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. It was fun.
Okay. And thanks for our listeners and watchers. As always, best of luck on your healing journey, and we'll see you next time.